Welcome to the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Here are your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub.
All right, welcome to Legally Sound Smart Business. This is Nasser Pasha.
And this is Matt Staub.
And this is where we cover business in the news, as well as put on our legal twists and also answer some of your business legal questions that you can, of course, send in to ask at legallysoundsmartbusiness.com. Or you can go to our website and fill out the form, and that might be easier for you because I know email is very difficult.
All right, let's get into it here. It's a little bit cold here today, so we're going to do a tropical location story for this first one. It's in Hawaii, Honolulu specifically, but it is essentially an age discrimination claim. So there's this guy, he's 45 years old, trying to be a police officer, and he goes through the process, and I guess essentially they made comments throughout the hiring process, or at least a couple. One like, "I doubt someone your age could handle the stress of training." So essentially, he doesn't end up getting the job, and he thinks it's because of his age. Like I said, there's comments made, and looks like there was, at least in his opinion, several less qualified candidates that got chosen over him. But this is something that I'm sure comes up all the time, not just in Hawaii, or maybe it does. I don't know. I don't read too much Hawaiian news, but it's something that comes up, and sometimes these claims are legitimate and sometimes they're not. Looking at some of the comments they made, this seems like it's a more legitimate one for a claim that he has for age discrimination.
Yeah, I think some of our listeners are wondering, well, if they're hiring for a police officer, you don't want necessarily officers that are too old because of the physical needs, but that's not the standard here, right? It's if they're capable of performing the job efficiently, then that by itself can't be a reason to discriminate because of age. And there are exceptions. And we've talked about this before, about this bona fide occupational qualification, this BFOQ standard. And so in this article, though, I think it's not just whether or not the police officer or the candidate can actually perform its services, but he's saying that they ask questions whether he can follow directions from a senior officer that's younger than him. And that may be a little iffy.
Yeah, there's a couple things too, reading more through this, that they took other candidates that had less experience. Well, yeah, I mean, if he's 45 years old, they are going to have less experience if they're younger people. So some of it just kind of makes sense. But yeah, this is just a situation where you have to have the right reasoning for not hiring someone. Definitely don't make some of the comments that they made, because those are going to come back to haunt them, I'm guessing, in the lawsuit that he's eventually filed.
Yeah, you're right, because they may even have legitimate reasons to not hire him, but those comments are going to exasperate the situation. And so that's why even in your employment ads, you're prohibited from describing, we want a certain age or so forth. And in those interview questions, stay away from any of those kinds of topics, age, sex, gender, family status in California, sexual orientation in California, and now other states as well. Some of these off topics.
Yeah, it reminds me, I went to an interview, I'm trying to think, it was at least over 3 years ago now, and obviously there's these things that the interviewer can't ask, and I sit down and this guy just starts asking questions like this right away.
Yeah.
Are you single, married, how old, like just all the wrong questions.
How old are you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go to Craigslist and the job listings, and you can just see all of the ones that are violating the equal employment laws, and you'll get a nice kick out of it.
Yeah, that should be a red flag to anyone. I mean, obviously, job market's tough right now, but if you have a couple options on spots to work for, I'd probably go for the ones that aren't asking all the wrong questions, because that's usually a red flag that something bad's going to happen down the road.
No doubt. It's also good to know that the age for age discrimination only applies to those who are age 40 and older. So it doesn't protect workers under the age of 40. So if you're being discriminated because you're too young, for example, that's actually not a protection under the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Act.
More bad news for young people. All right. Well, I feel a lot warmer now after reading that article based out of Hawaii. So now I'm ready to get into the first question. This comes from an SEO firm in San Diego. Hey, guys. Great show. Oh, that's nice of them.
Thank you.
Here's my question.
Did you submit this? Or?
I definitely didn't edit at the beginning. That's actually all it says is, hey guys, great show. I'm looking to start a new business as soon as possible, but I heard about this yearly fee in California. If I start the business before the end of the year, will I have to pay it for this year? Like I said, SEO firm out of San Diego. This is something that I think more people are getting more aware of. You know, let's say if you set up an entity like an LLC, for example, in California, there's this franchise fee, franchise tax. I forget how they classify it, but it's essentially $800. It's the price of doing business in California.
Yeah.
And it's a annual fee. It's not a one-time thing when you start it up. It's every single year that you're up and running. I've definitely talked to a bunch of people that have shied away from setting up an entity because they didn't want to pay this money. And I think, well, it's only $100. So if you're really worried about that for an entire year, that's not worth not having that limited liability. But
yeah,
it's not for everyone, but there is a little exception here to getting out of paying the $800 if it's towards the end of the year like we are right now, right?
Yeah, so it's 15 days or less that you've been operating in this tax year. And there's also a requirement that no business is conducted, right?
Right.
This $800 fee, you're right. A lot of people are reluctant to not only get an entity, but also get a little creative in having multiple entities too, because sometimes you want to split up your business operations and real estate and so forth. And this can prohibit you from doing that because of the cost effectiveness.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I know something else for some of these businesses. I've talked to people where they formed an entity, you know, years ago, never did any business with it. And since they never did any business, they never really paid attention. And then they get a nice little bill there from the state saying, hey, you owe us $800 for every single year that you were up and running. And those are, I mean, I've never had any success really with getting people out of those. There are exceptions and there are instances of it happening, but it's very difficult to get that money wiped out, to get those fees removed.
This, again, is the unfortunate part about doing business in California, because not all states are like this. There's a lot of states in the nation in which it's very common to have 5+ entities just for one single business. And that's in order to split up control or assets and so forth and build multiple layers, because usually there may be an initiation fee. And even if there is some other yearly or reoccurring tax or fee associated with each entity, it is not $800 per. So big difference. Again, an unfortunate part of California's tax system.
Yeah, and it's not the only thing in California where you end up paying more than other states.
Yeah.
I always call it a location tax.
Yeah. The Sunshine Tax in Southern California.
Sunshine Tax, there you go. Well, I think we answered their question, so we'll just move on here. If we didn't, then... Oh, we definitely did. I don't know why I'm saying if we didn't.
Send in a complaint.
Yeah. Next article here has to do with FICO, which does the credit worthiness of individuals here, but it's opening up to small businesses. So smaller businesses, generally speaking, I guess have had more difficulty getting loans than other bigger businesses. But I guess FICO is now doing something where it's opening it up to small businesses as well.
It's not for free. You do have to pay. And I think this is beginning next year. But what's interesting about this, because usually if you get denied, you don't really have a good understanding. At least a lot of small business owners don't have an understanding of why they were denied. And this may help them out a little bit. But frankly, the reasons are very simple. And it's just like anything else, is that the banks want to be able to see that you can pay this back. And the best way small businesses have been able to get funding, at least in our experience, is where you have an established business at least 2 years, and you have accounts receivable that you can base it upon. And you can get kind of creative. Like, for example, if it's a construction loan for a new building and so forth, you'll want to make sure that you have tenants with leases in there ready to go, and that those tenants are bona fide and actually have a running business as well. Or you have purchase orders if you're selling goods. And those are good examples of how you can get funding. Now, with the FICO score, it's almost like a credit score, but most business loans also that are not associated with the success of future business, in the sense that you don't have purchase orders, is based upon a personal credit, because you're going to end up signing a personal guarantee anyway. So I'd like to see how this actually ends up working in real life when it gets going.
It sounds like it's going to be a positive thing for smaller, medium-sized businesses, right?
The business score and personal scores from Experian, TransUnion, Advantage Score, which are the same pretty much personal credit services that are out there, the agencies out there, is what's going to be used to determine these small business scores. So I hope it's a benefit, but they're also charging $50 a month to monitor your FICO score. So I don't know if it's just another product that they're trying to sell.
Yeah, it could be. At least we're going to get more commercials with all these different credit score rating commercials. Which some of them are good and some of them...
Freecreditreport.com, right?
Is that the one where they have...
Yeah, I like how you're looking at the positive. At the least we get good commercials out of it.
Yeah, well, that's, I think that's the takeaway from everything. As long as the commercials are good.
That's true.
All right, let's get into the next question here. I heard that California LLC law is going to change for 2014. What do I need to be on the lookout for? And this comes from someone out of Hollywood. So I'm glad they were in California when they asked the question. That's a good start.
That is good. Well, I think this is a lot of attorneys are talking about this, but I don't think most business owners of LLCs have any clue about this. Hasn't been a lot of press.
Right. I've already talked to a couple people in the last week and I mentioned it and they have no idea. So at first I kind of looked through everything and it's not a ton of changes. It's now going to be under the RULLCA instead of the previous act.
Yeah, I'm guessing the acronym is Revised Uniform Limited Liability Company Act. And
yeah,
is that right? Okay, cool. Yeah, because there's these agencies that go around and try to develop law that is standardized or uniform, as they put it, across different states to make things easier. And this Revised Uniform Act is basically trying to match what's going on already in the rest of the nation, which is actually unusual because California is usually pretty aggressive in some of the modern changes that it makes for its laws. So it's a little unique that we're going back to a standard that we actually haven't already completed ourselves. But these changes themselves really are not going to affect most limited liability companies, at least not our clients, in the sense that if you have an operating agreement already, then your operating agreement is going to rule how you operate your business. But a lot of these laws that are changing apply to those, the default laws of which you don't have an operating agreement. What happens? So for example, and kind of hard to get into the details of all these minute changes, but for example, a company that is managed by members, which is the default, and there's no operating agreement, each member is going to own equally. Each operating agreement that is adopted has to be adopted by all members, even if you agreed that one member has 80% control. And so these are some things to think about because you don't have an operating agreement.
And that's kind of what I thought when I first heard this through. It's a lot of changes to the default rules, which I thought, well, it's not a big deal because, you know, you should have everything covered. But what about those LLCs that have these operating agreements that don't address every issue?
Yeah.
And now maybe they didn't address it and there's a new default rule. And if they don't address it, the default rule is going to control. And now they might, I don't think it's going to change too much, but it could change the way that things are done. Like you said, that one example, you know, just to amend it itself, you have to have consent of all the members.
Well, you'll see this a lot with those default operating agreements that are really short that you may get from the internet or who knows where else, and or maybe you purchase a template.
Yeah.
But those are the ones that are going to be dangerous because they're not going to be up to date or they're not going to contemplate all these default issues that may have been okay at the time, but may be changing now.
Then that's exactly right. Those are the ones that are going to, I shouldn't say be in trouble, but are definitely, I mean, I would advise everyone, every LLC to look over the agreement and or at least have your attorney look it over and make sure that everything's squared up. But yeah, especially those ones that are shorter and just basically assume every previous default rule, those are ones that are going to definitely need to look into this and make some changes. Because I mean, other than the default rules, it's stuff here and there, member dissociation. I think LLCs will be member managed unless the articles expressly state otherwise. I know there's a bunch of stuff with fiduciary duties of the members and the managers.
A lot of those were already part of the law. It's just there's little nuances to those that have changed.
I think we just basically wanted an opportunity to talk about people that pull their operating agreement off some random place. It's not full.
That's true.
It's not up to the code.
No, but you're right because we're kind of pushing this aside because on one hand, it's not a big deal if you had an attorney that is competent and that provided you an operating agreement in the last, I would say, few years, or if they've updated in the last few years. But if not, then this law is going to affect you for sure.
So just look it over with an attorney and then you'll be fine, probably.
I like the probably. It's assuming the attorney knows what they're doing.
Yeah. All right, let's take the break for this show. And I don't know how I just saw this, or I don't know if you have known about this either, but...
No, not at all.
So we talk about The Office a lot on this podcast, but... And the show's been done for 2 years? 1 year? I can't remember. Seems like it's been forever since they've... The last episode, but...
Oh, yeah, it's been done, right? It's been a while. I would say a year.
So there was this blog, and I was looking through it. I don't know if they started from the beginning, because I was trying to find one of the first episodes, the one where he makes all the offensive comments and everyone has like all the stereotype episode. I didn't see that one in there, but basically
the second or third episode, I think.
Yeah, this blog goes through and has attorneys assess the litigation value of each of the claims that could be made or all the different lawsuits that could arise from every episode of The Office. So I'm looking at one right now. The Ben Franklin episode, I don't know if you remember that one where...
Vaguely.
He tries to get a male stripper to come in and he puts Jim in charge and he orders, or he like has a historian, yeah. Ben Franklin come in. And so the litigation value of that episode, 800,000 plus. But that's the reason I was trying to find the one where he does all the stereotypes, because that's got to... I mean, that was...
That's probably the worst, I agree.
Yeah, it's got to be up there. I've seen similar things to this. I know there was one that did... every episode of Law and Order and analyzed it.
Well, that would be exhausting.
On how realistic it was. But this is more lighthearted. Yeah. This is, like I said, there's every episode's got something.
Well, look at the title. I love the title. It's the title's That's What She Said.
That's What She Said, yeah.
We'll put a link in our show notes so everyone can check that out. And it's from an HR company, which is totally fitting.
Yeah, this is pretty good. It's a nice trip down memory lane reading through some of these now that the show is off the air and we don't have anything else anymore.
Well, you know how I prep for the show, right? For example, this morning I worked out and afterwards I put on The Office and had some pizza and got ready for the show. And that's a total 100% truth. So every show day, I'm going to intend to do that.
That's why all those issues are always the ones that get brought up on the show. That's always in the forefront of our minds.
Yeah,
we'll link that though, because it's still a good read, even though they're done posting on the blog since the show ended a couple years ago, but it's funny.
All right, let's get to our next topic.
I hope you're able to follow this one. It's a sports-related thing, so I know sometimes it gets a little bit confusing for you.
Yeah. just tell me the name of the sport first. That should help me out.
Well, you're pretty good at football. You seem to know enough.
Oh, well, I've been getting by making as if I understood everything for a while now, so pretty good at that.
So it's a claim brought by someone against the Baltimore Ravens logo. And I don't know. I think this individual might have brought a claim against the NFL, ultimately. But it stems back all the way to 1998. Basically, there's this guy. He said that he drew this original logo, or at least the logo that the Ravens used to use, which is the letter B with the little shield and the wings on the side of it. Basically, he said he drew this. They violated his copyright. But the weird thing is, I'm reading the story. So in 1998, a jury ruled that the Ravens did, in fact, steal his idea, but he wasn't awarded any damages. And then later, a court says the glimpse that, you know, in the NFL Films videos on the NFL Network, you know, showing this image doesn't violate his copyright. It's just kind of weird that it sounds like they...
Maybe fair use or something.
I mean, I don't know the full procedural history of all this, but it does seem like they violated his copyright, but they just never got any money from it. And the NFL is worth so much money that it seems like he should get something.
It does seem strange, but one important lesson that we can get from this is that when something's successful, these things come out of the woodwork, so to speak. And this guy obviously had a legitimate claim because he was found to have been the original creator of this artwork. But the point is that it's very hard to contemplate this stuff in the beginning because everyone's kind of loosey-goosey because nothing's making any money yet. But think about when things become successful later.
Right.
And this is what happens with every big startup. You know, look at Facebook. You know, it's a good example. And even the more recent, everything from Twitter, Snapchat, you'll see lawsuits coming out from nowhere from people in the early days that dealt with the company.
Yeah, the Facebook example is really good. You heard about that. I mean, I'm sure there was multiple ones, but there was the one individual in particular who What did he claim, that Mark Zuckerberg signed over like a huge chunk of Facebook at the beginning because he needed some money? It was some random thing that just didn't have any legs to it.
We don't know, because all those have been settled out. That's true. That, the Social Network movie kind of talks about everything, the dealing with those twins, his former partner, the fact that while he was in college, he was hired to do certain things, and then some of the code that he used to develop that project he used for Facebook. But it's hard to really know exactly what happened without really diving deep into the evidence.
Right.
No matter what, it comes out once you get successful.
I forgot the thing about the twins. Yeah, that was a much bigger one.
Yeah.
But even though that Mark Zuckerberg got Facebook, they got one of those pistachio commercials, so I feel like it's pretty even. I mean, they had Psy, they've had Snoop Dogg. Look at all the people. That's a good, some good company.
That's true. Very true.
This article here blends well into our last question, and I think we're going to bring a special guest on to help answer this question here.
Let's get Falon on from DigiThrive. He's a web developer. Let's see if he's available. Hopefully he is. We told him we're going to call him, so. Hey, Falon, what's going on?
Hey, how are you doing?
All right, so we have Falon here from DigiThrive. Is it digithrive.com?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, that's original. You know, use the .com instead of the .net.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Well, so we have a question from one of our listeners, and before we get into some of the legal stuff, I wanted to get your perspective. So, you know, you're a web developer and marketing, internet marketing as well a little bit. So this is what the question is. My web developer and marketing company, and I assume this is not you, but is basically holding my logo and brand materials hostage, saying that they will only sign off the rights to it unless I pay them the rest of the amount of the contract. They created it for me, so shouldn't I already own it? And this is from a Orange County clothes designer. So, you know, we can give our legal perspective on it, but I wanted to see, what are the standards in web development on this issue?
Good question. Which perspective are we looking at? The company?
Well, the person who asks is a company owner, yeah, a clothes designer.
From what I understand, I mean, it just depends on the agreement to set up with their graphic designer. I mean, there's two ways, and you guys are the experts at this, but there's the work for hire, and then there's where the copyright belongs to the artist. That's something that's pretty gray from what I see. Every time we set up an agreement, it's this big thing, like we have to talk about with the client, and they have no idea. They just think that they own it, like, especially with sites like Elance and stuff like that, where they can just buy something and they're done. You know, but in the U.S. and probably everywhere, it's a little bit different, where, you know, if someone just creates something, somebody takes a picture, whatever it is, the copyright belongs to the artist immediately unless they transfer it over. That's what I understand, but maybe you can tell me better.
Has this ever been an issue with you? Have you ever come across this? And if so, how did you handle it?
Well, one thing to consider, too, is the usage rates. You know, if they pay me, you know, I'll probably talk more as a freelancer, because I've done a lot of work with that as well. If they pay me, they pay me a reasonable amount. I'm a little more flexible with this, or there are other people that are a lot more hypercritical and by the book. So usually I'll just hand over the copyright or just, you know, be okay with it. But every once in a while, I'll see the logo, like something like on vans and signage and stuff like that, and it kind of bugs me. But that's not really the legal way, so... in place, right?
No, but the non-legal conversation is almost always more important than what's in paper. And we talk about that all the time, is creating expectations and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember even when hiring a photographer early on, even having the conversation like that they have to sign over copyrights to me is a confusing conversation. It's like, wait a minute, I thought I'm hiring you to take photos for me. Why wouldn't I own the photos? But that's not how the law is. And so that's why it takes those extra steps to actually assign that copyright. And I think you already may have mentioned it, but do you think a lot of the customers have no idea that that is the case, that you actually have to make specific efforts to assign what you create for them, whether it's your website or the logo or whatever, that what you provided to them, you actually have to make efforts to assign them credit to actually be able to use it legally?
Yeah, there's definitely more work you gotta put into all this. So the answer is yes.
Okay. Here's a law really quick. As Falon mentioned it, there's a concept called work for hire, and that's where you have an independent contractor that you hire to develop a whatever it is. It's an art piece or a logo or some set of code. And that work for hire language, if set up correctly in the agreement, and by the way, it's very easy to make a mistake on how you draft those agreements, but if you do it right, then the business owner or whoever's hiring that person to provide that logo is going to own it. Otherwise, the default is that independent contractor owns those rights. And so you may have a limited license to use it, but you may have a limitation on being able to resell it if you were acquired or anything like that. So that's pretty much how we handle it. I actually dealt with this exact issue where, because my client, this was before they became a client, they had this marketing contract that didn't spell out all the intellectual property issues. And then when I came in, this contract was a monthly contract and they wanted to terminate. But then, of course, the web developer is saying, or I was actually a marketing company, a branding company, that, oh, well, we own the brand. So if you want to keep using it, then you have to pay X amount of dollars. And it wasn't easy to fix. So to answer this guy's question, I guess you'd have to take a look at your agreement and see how that is contemplated.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a bit of a battle because as an artist, designer, photographer, you're constantly fighting for your rights for this kind of stuff. Because I mean, if you hand it over, then you're pretty much working not for free, but for cheap.
Yeah.
You're just giving away your property. So then, of course, on the business side, you just want to own it too. So you don't have to deal with like royalties and stuff like that. So it just depends on what side of the coin you're on.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do? That way our listeners can learn a little bit about your company.
Yeah, sure. So DigiThrive, we are a web development company. We focus mostly on web applications, and we do some mobile apps as well. Anybody like a startup that has an idea and he doesn't really want to build his own team, we can beat that team and build out his idea for him. We do also like brochures, sell sites and stuff like that too, but we really enjoy working on the challenging sites with a big idea and develop technology that'll fit in and provide a solution.
Cool. We'll post a link and a bio on our show notes, and you can find Falon at digithrive.com.
That sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Falon.
See you guys.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So thanks, Falon, for attending our podcast. That was really neat to see some of that perspective, because usually from a company owner and our clients, we're just trying to make sure we get the content from these developers. But of course, these developers, that's how they make money. So we have to make sure that they're protected too.
You know, what's funny is Falon just did this, but a lot of the guests we've had on, they always preface what they're saying by, I'm not sure about the legal aspect. And then they always end up hitting the legal issue and answer pretty much everything we're going to say for us. So I think people just don't know that they know the law as well as they do.
Yeah, it's instincts. Everyone sees what other people are doing, and that can get you by for a little bit, except if there's cases where people don't do what's right.
Right.
Well, anyway, he mentioned people hiring freelancers on Odesk and Elance, and I thought this was interesting that these two companies, if you're not familiar with them, Elance.com and Odesk.com are basically freelance websites that you can hire independent contractors. There's web designers there. There's people that can make phone calls for you, or assistants, or web developers, or even accountants are found on there as well. And so these two companies have been doing it for a while, but they're actually merging their whole back end and turning into one company. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I wasn't really familiar with either of these companies, but it's always intriguing to me when two competitors join forces.
Exactly.
I'm looking at a picture here from, looks like they're two owners smiling and shaking hands. So I guess maybe they weren't that big of competitors, but.
No, but they were. Everyone saw them as the two biggest companies in this industry. And the fact that they're actually combining forces is pretty cool.
So like I said, I'm not as familiar with these two companies, but I'm guessing, you know, one of them might have a better technology than the other one, and the other one might have better talent, and just combining forces, you know, mutually beneficial relationship that can just create some sort of superpower. And I'm sure there's still other competitors to them even after the merger out there, but sometimes when you see another company that does something better to you in one aspect and vice versa, you can merge together and become even better.
Exactly. And so in their press release, they didn't disclose exactly the legal structure, but what they're doing is, I think, a classic merger where they'll trade stocks and create a new company itself under which brand, we're not sure yet. But there's a lot of different ways that you can cooperate with other businesses. You don't necessarily have to merge right away. There's other ways to do that. For example, you can go through a joint venture, which is basically, from a legal perspective, a partnership. So you have, let's say, one company A and company B that is joining forces on a particular project, and that project is the name of the joint venture. from a technical perspective, you are general partners, so each of you are unlimited liability. But of course, these company A and company B are shielded by their entity, so they have that corporate veil. But not only that, there's also other ways to do it. A lot of times you have companies buying out the other wholly, or maybe they'll just be cooperating with each other through some contracts and so forth, which again can be construed as a joint venture or what have you. But I'm kind of excited from an employer's perspective, because between Elance and Odesk, a lot of times people from a, again, employer's perspective, you're wondering, okay, should I place a post on this or that? Which one's better? But now I guess you don't even have to decide, because hopefully the best of both worlds will combine.
Either that, or they'll take the worst things from both companies and they'll just fizzle out completely.
I think that's what they said they were going. The world is going where we are going. And I think this is going to be the end of both of their companies. They're just going to go into, let's take the worst of each.
If each company cuts their worst employees and then those employees spring off and form their own company, then I think that would actually happen. I was going to try to pull it into the office, but we already discussed that. So I don't want to, I want to limit the amount of time we talk about the office in each episode.
Yeah. Well, and we didn't get a pizza episode. There was a pizza article my cousin from Canada sent us. It was on talking about how the cheese subsidies or cheese tariffs from the United States were being restricted, but we couldn't find a legal spin for that. I wish we would have been able to cover it.
And also they talked about buying prepared cheese and pepperoni kits, which I just can't accept. I don't know. I don't care about the legalities of it. That's just that's unacceptable from a moral standpoint for me.
You're saying it should be illegal. That's our legal twist.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, this is episode 1100. I'm sorry, that joke doesn't get old. But no, episode 11. We're right off the episode with former mayor Jerry Sanders, so looking forward to this. And this is coming out on, what, the 30th?
Yeah, right before the end of the year. So this is our year-end review episode where we didn't go over anything about the previous year. Like, no best ofs from this podcast.
Or we didn't go over many new laws of 2014. Well, we did go over the new LLC laws, but maybe next week we'll do some employment law changes that are coming out. And we haven't hit it yet, but we're going to have to do the Affordable Care Act, right? How that affects small businesses.
Yeah. We definitely need to talk about that at some point, but that's a big issue. So we'll have to carve out a good chunk of time for that one.
Okay. We'll carve out a whole month for it.
And also, I've been trying to think of a closing line, and I'm going to, my New Year's resolution for the podcast is to come up with one for the first episode of 2014, because I'm still not satisfied with anything I've come up with yet.
Okay, no, that's not true. You had one. What was it? You messaged it to me. Let me find out.
I didn't like it.
No, let's try it out. I mean, you never know. Let's see. Oh yeah, keep it sound and keep it smart.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you should definitely say that. Try it out.
All right. Well, if people like it, then write us in and let us know, or email us and let us know if you like to keep it sound. All right, I'll end today's podcast with it after you sign off, and then we'll see what people think.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll hopefully be listening to you. No, you'll be listening to us next week. And of course, don't forget to send in your questions, ask@legallysoundsmartbusiness.com. We definitely enjoy reading them and enjoy answering them. I'll see you next week.
And make sure to keep it sound and keep it smart.
Oh, that was perfect. All right. Have a good week, everybody.
This has been the Legally Sound Smart Business Show with your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub. The Legally Sound Smart Business Show is your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Legally Sound Smart Business is a podcast that is intended but not promised or guaranteed to be current, complete, or up to date, and should in no way be taken as an indication of future results. No attorney-client relationship is created by listening or submitting questions to the podcast. The podcast does not constitute legal advice, but rather is offered only for general informational and educational purposes. You should not act or rely on any information in the podcast without first seeking the advice of an attorney. The opinions expressed in the podcast reflect the views of those individuals and do not necessarily represent the views of any other individual or business. For more information about the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, visit legallysoundsmartbusiness.com.